Hey folks, make sure to stick around for the outro after today's interview.
Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas.
Today I'm joined by Jeannie Luby. True to this podcast name, this episode is full of hard questions and a challenge to exercise the muscle of our minds. We talk about engaging people thoughtfully, recognizing and understanding worldview and changing cultural definitions, how to think about critical theory from a biblical grid, how to approach controversial topics, and how in the end, humility and love covers all the mistakes we make along the way. Let's dive in. Well, welcome today, Jeannie. It's so fun to have you with us from Nebraska. So tell us a little bit about your family and an interesting fact about you that not everybody knows.
Well, good morning, Whitney. It's a pleasure to be with you today. I am speaking to you today from Nebraska. My husband, Brant, and I have lived here for the past 17 years. We have two children. Owen is 16, Elizabeth is 13. And an interesting fact would be that I used to teach high school special ed and was a middle school counselor for many years. And perhaps something else your listeners might be interested to know is that I am friends and neighbors to your sweet parents and have had the pleasure of serving alongside your mom in community Bible study for the past 7 years. So this is the relationship through your parents is how you and I first met.
That's right. And I was thinking about this, that when we actually lived in Nebraska for a short season of about 7 months and lived down the road from you guys, I remember your kids were kind of growing out of the playground, but my kids were very much into swing set and needing to be outside. And so you offered your swing set in the backyard. And also, you know, I got to connect with you through community Bible study in a season where really God was rebuilding me. And it was a really hard season for me. And so it's fun to think back to that and how God crosses paths with people in ways that bring healing and encouragement and just little provisions in ways that we needed, you know, just like that playground was such a small thing, maybe that you, a gesture that you felt like, oh, no big deal. But to us, it meant so much. So, so it's fun to think about those things. So
it is, it was a joy to see little kids on our play set. That was wonderful.
Yeah. Well, now they're a little bit bigger too. So, not quite out of that stage, but a little bit bigger. And so, but we most recently connected at a women's retreat and you were leading a breakout session on engaging the culture with thoughtful questions. And I just thought your material and approach was really inviting and relevant. So one thing that I've seen highlighted for myself in these last few years is really just how electrically charged the atmosphere is, that our differences have been highlighted. It's increasingly more difficult to engage with folks who don't think or act or talk just like we do. Mm-hmm. And in our differences, we've become more divided and less inclined to fully listen to one another. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for you just to talk a little bit about what drew you to this topic of engaging the culture with thoughtful questions and just wanting to develop your personal approach to engaging the culture.
Yes, yes. Well, I absolutely sense all of those things that you're talking about with just the extra intensity with engaging one another. And I would say my interest on this topic really began about 10 years ago. Looking back, there were probably about three areas of my life that were intersecting that really gave me a sense of urgency about learning how to do it better, how to engage the world better for Christ. And I think the first one was my husband and I, about 10 years ago, did a deep dive in studying apologetics. And at that time, I was really benefiting from this rich understanding of the truth of Christianity and the reliability of the gospels, the evidence for the existence of God and the evidence for his resurrection. And anyone who has studied those topics, you know that it just makes you stand up a little taller and you're like, oh, it's so true. Everything is true, what we believe, and gets you kind of going. And so I had that fervor to share the truth of Christianity. And, but at the same time, you know, my kids were still pretty young at that time, but I had older nieces and nephews who were in high school and college. And they, I'm just hearing these stories of how things are sounding a lot different in culture and how the world is responding to their Christian ideas and values. And it started to plant some seeds of urgency in me. Like, not only do I need to get equipped to respond to culture and to engage the culture, but I need to equip my kids. And so that was pushing me forward a little bit. And I think the other piece and what else was happening was I was really, in my efforts of sharing, I was really hitting some roadblocks. You know, I can share a couple of stories here. One night, my husband and I were returning to a banquet in a residency that he'd been a part of. And there was a couple there, one of which we'd been praying for many years, just a beautiful couple. We loved them very much, but he had grown up in the church and had, kind of walked away as an adult. And then his wife would have, I think, described herself as an atheist. And so anyway, this particular evening, we had an opportunity to sit at a table with just him and gave us an opportunity to engage him and talk more about his life. And I took that opportunity to share with him about a book I'd been reading where I was learning this entire village had received a dream from God and he had revealed himself. This entire village that came to know Christ overnight. And just, I was sharing with him how amazing that is, that we have this God who will just use any supernatural way he desires to reveal himself to us. And his response to me just really surprised me. And he said that some version of, yes, well, you know, people can come up with all sorts of ideas about things if they're depressed or downtrodden to make them feel better. And I was just left speechless. I'm not usually speechless, but I was speechless in that situation. And I just really had no idea to how to move forward with that conversation with him, even though I desperately wanted to.
Like, it felt truly like you said, a roadblock, or just kind of like a, okay, well, I guess that's the end of that conversation. I don't even know what to do with that.
Right. And we care deeply for these people and, you know, wouldn't want that to be the end of the conversation, but I really stumbled. I didn't know how to keep moving forward. And then very close by, I don't know, God must have really been triggering this in me, because very soon, again, I had another opportunity to share. I'd been praying for my hairdresser at the time, and she started bringing up some ideas about God and Christianity. And she had shared something about, you know, she believed that all religions basically believe the same thing. We're all going to go to heaven, except maybe some really bad people. And I just got so excited because I thought, oh, I know the answer to this. I'm going to tell her why her beliefs are wrong and what is really true about that. And as you might imagine, I just kept talking and talking and talking. And I could tell as I was talking, she was withdrawing. And eventually I talked her right out of listening to me. So I really stumbled there with over-talking and saying the wrong things and too much of whatever I was saying. And so I just was struggling to find a way to engage that was productive.
I think that's so helpful. And thank you just for being so honest, because I think a lot of times what plunges us into deeper learning and a hunger to know more is a result of just our own failings and feeling ill-equipped maybe to handle something. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love for us to begin by defining some terms here. You've talked about, just in our conversations, about worldviews. And until I learned about this as a teacher, maybe 10 or so years ago, I really didn't know what a worldview even meant.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. This was really an answer for me. I stumbled upon this article by Neil Shenvey, who's this homeschooling theoretical chemist and a Christian apologist, which is just kind of a fun combination. But he's this super bright guy who thankfully was way out in front of me on all of these questions and provided me with some important perspective on conflicting worldviews and changing definitions and how that impacted how I thought about an engaged culture. So if we look specifically at what a worldview is, it's just a lens that we view everything in the world. So a worldview answers basic questions about life and reality, answers questions, just like four basic questions. Who are we? What is our problem? What is the solution? And what is our primary moral duty or purpose? Excuse me. As Christians, our answers to these questions come from God and His Word. But, you know, really, how do people who don't know God or believe in His Word, how would they answer these questions? And how does that affect their worldview? And I think it was just helpful for me to think through this, like just remembering that it's not just Christians that need to give an answer for why they believe the world is the way it is. Everyone has to explain reality around us. And so everyone has a worldview, whether they think they do or not. In this article that I came across from Neil Shenvey, where it compared and contrasted two specific worldviews, Christianity and critical theory. And honestly, this was just a game changer for me. It seems really basic, but it just helped me. I just feel like today, Whitney, that culture, everything is so confusing. And I felt like reading through this article, just comparing and contrasting two worldviews, it just gave me a way to think about what I'm seeing and hearing around me. It gave me a way to bring order to what felt a little bit confusing and chaotic.
Jeannie, I know it might be a little hard for listeners to visualize, but I'd love for you just to walk through almost a diagram of how you process two different worldviews and the way that they view the world.
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. And we'll just go through those four questions. Who are we? What is our problem? What is the answer to our problem? And what is our purpose? And I'll just explain two different worldviews with each. So if we start with who are we? As Christians, we know that we have a creator God who made us in His own image. He made them male and female. He is the one who has given us our value and identity, Genesis 1. But in critical theory, it is devoid of a creation story. That is not important to them. It doesn't matter. So they are left with the weighty work of identifying and designing themselves. And we can think about how that fact alone sets up an important foundational difference between two worldviews. And as a result, is anybody noticing any identity issues in our culture today? If we look at that second worldview question, what is our problem? As Christians, we would say the fall, our sin, is our fundamental problem. But as critical theorists, who believe human relationships should be fundamentally understood in power dynamics, putting people in groups of either oppressors or oppressed, oppression would be seen then as their biggest problem. If we look at the answer to the question, what is the answer to our problem? For Christians, of course, Christ, His sacrificial work, redemptive work on the cross is our answer. Critical theorists, by contrast, believe the answer to our problems lie in protest, resistance, activism, education. Again, I'm hoping that people are hearing like, oh, I see this. I'm seeing how that plays out in culture today. And finally, when we ask the question, what is our purpose as Christians, moral duty and restoration, loving God and glorifying Him is our purpose. But for critical theorists, the purpose is equity, power reversal, liberation, justice, and diversity. So both Christianity and critical theory worldviews are mutually incompatible. To the extent that a person adopts a Christian worldview, they have to abandon the basic tenets of critical theory if they're going to remain consistent.
I think that this goes back to what you said at the beginning, you know, that a worldview is really a lens with which you see the world. And so if you are looking at the world through a biblical worldview, then what that means is that you're taking everything that you see in culture and you're processing it through a grid and a filter of what does the Bible say about this? What are the truths of God inform and tell me about what I'm seeing and observing in the world? And so, again, as hard as that is maybe to relay over a podcast, it's probably easier seen in like a chart format. I think that what you just shared is so helpful and offers just some tools, I think, that we don't even know, because sometimes we're just bombarded. We don't know to use those tools because we're, you know, overwhelmed by everything that the world is throwing at us.
Yes. Yes. And I would say too, that, as I was hearing some of this information, it did feel a little overwhelming initially, but I was just picking up pieces as I was going through, and it really seemed to make a difference. So I would just encourage anyone listening, like, just listen for one thing, one or two things that you're like, oh, I guess I hadn't thought about that. Maybe it's just as we're talking about worldview, it's helping you bring clarity to your own worldview. Like, oh, am I consistent in my own worldview? And I would say too, many people would not likely claim to have a critical theory worldview, but because critical theory ideas are widely offered and accepted in culture today, in media, education, entertainment, so on, if someone isn't actively thinking about what they believe and why they believe it, they might very well adopt some of this critical theory worldview. And, you know, you may even ask, Whitney, you know, just like, how does even knowing someone's worldview help with engaging others, which is kind of what we're talking about today. And I would say this was incredibly helpful for me to take away my defensiveness. It just takes away some of the shock. If someone is sharing something that seems like the opposite of what I believe, instead of responding emotionally or defensively, or not even knowing what to say, like in the story I shared earlier, I can think to myself, oh gosh, this is a good opportunity for me to find out more about what they believe. What is their worldview? It just takes the emotion and dials it down a little bit. I can also, when I'm listening to someone who has a completely different worldview than I do, I can think about the things that they're sharing. I can say, oh, you know what? I understand why they would think that. That would be consistent with their worldview. And so I think understanding this and thinking about worldview helps me stay present, and it guides my internal dialogue when I have conversation with others. And it, I think also worldview gives me clarity about what I believe, reminds me of the beauty and the truth of Christianity. And the biblical worldview can stand up to and endure questions. So we don't need to feel insecure or intimidated. Even when we don't have all the answers, we're standing on the rock, so we can be gentle and patient with others. So I think that there's lots of benefits here. And most importantly, I think it helps us develop our compassion when we understand that people are believing completely different things. So only one of these worldviews offers any forgiveness or hope or love or peace. And so I think, just to share one last thing on worldview, I don't want to belabor it, but I just think it's foundational. You know, if we compare and contrast worldviews, it's just an excellent activity to do with our kids or grandkids, because you can ask them worldview questions to help them make sense of what they believe and why they believe it, how it is similar or dissimilar to other beliefs. You know, we can ask them, what would happen if we reject God as our creator? Just go back to that even first question. And it can just be a way to organize your thinking and give you wisdom about engaging the culture.
Jeannie, one more time, would you just restate those four questions of worldview so that we Yes. really have those clearly outlined? And I can put those in the show notes as well.
Yes. The worldview questions are, who are we? What is your problem? What is the answer to our problem? And what is our purpose?
That's great. Okay. So along these lines, you've mentioned that you've just seen basic terms redefined in the culture. How have you seen that? And maybe just give some examples.
Yes. Our culture is definitely redefining words at a rapid pace. Words like equality, justice, diversity, love, faith, truth, and even what it means to be a man or a woman can be understood differently, and in some cases, oppositely from what historically the word has meant. So we can find ourselves having a conversation with someone, and we might be using the same words, but we really are just talking past each other. Or worse, we think we're in agreement, but it's based on a faulty understanding. So, for example, if we look at the word love, God's definition of love is being willing to sacrifice of ourselves for another's good. Culture's definition of love is affirming someone's thoughts and feelings, regardless if it's good for them or not. It's just an important worldview distinction, and one that we need to have clarity on. Another word we can look at is the word faith. God's definition is evidence-based trust. We see this through scripture. When John the Baptist sends two of his disciples as messengers to ask questions to Jesus, we want to know, is he the one to come? And Jesus answered them, go and tell John what you hear and see. He didn't say, just tell John to have faith. He said, go and tell them what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news preached to them. Jesus gave them and us good evidence to trust him by his actions, and our faith is based on that. Culture, on the other hand, defines faith blind, irrational trust. There's no reason to believe it, but I'm just going to have faith. I'm just going to have faith and it's just going to work out somehow. I think probably the most important word that has changed in definition is truth. And for us, biblical truth is grounded in the character of God. It is objective and universal. The truth is known by discovering the nature of God and his ways as revealed through scripture and within nature. But culture defines truth that it comes from the individual. It is subjective and situational. The truth is known through choosing to believe it and through personal experience. So basically, you're the creator of your own truth. And you can see how these definitions parallel our conflicting worldviews too. And I just want to point out, I don't share these differences in worldview or definitions to highlight any area to criticize someone. I do it so that we can think clearly and advance the gospel in wisdom and gentleness.
We'll be back in just a moment after a word from our sponsor. Well, now is the part of the show where I just get to give a fun shout out to all of those sponsors who have partnered with Woven over the course of this year. So, Literal Insurance, you know who you are on the LaGrange Square. We love you guys. Rhinestone Angel, one of the cutest boutiques in all of Texas, which is coming to you out of Flatonia. Y'all are the best. First Presbyterian Church here in LaGrange. We love that you guys have just partnered with us. And Thrivent Financial on LaGrange Square. Not only have you guys partnered with us, but you've allowed us to use your office spaces for our purposes. Camp Tejas Retreat Center in Giddings. Thank you, guys. Niche Insurance. What a gift you guys have been to us. And then finally, my personal favorite, Scar & Sons. You know who you are. So all of these amazing sponsors, we love you guys. Thank you for making not only the ongoing work of the local ministry possible, but also the ongoing work of the podcast, the writing, and all the behind-the-scenes things that are going on to continue to grow the kingdom work happening through Woven Ministry. We're grateful. And now back to the show.
So, Jeannie, how do you begin to engage people in controversial issues, hot topics, and just enter into these meaningful conversations?
Okay. My second excellent resource that I ran into that really helped me in this was a book by the name of Tactics, written by Greg Kokel, K-O-U-K-L. It really showed me how to use questions to engage anyone on any topic. And of course, his motive for asking questions is like ours, to engage people with the truth of Christianity. But they were incredibly helpful to me and simple, so I really appreciated them. The thing I loved about these questions is that you can use them with no matter how little you think you know on a matter, or how aggressive or how articulate or intelligent the other person is, you can open it and you can remain calm. And so the things that's so beneficial is that they shift the focus from talking to listening. And so it takes the pressure off. And we are just simply asking questions instead of making statements, which is more interactive, disarming, and in some cases can allow you to make your point without ever having to state what you believe. And I came across this Francis Schaeffer quote, which I just love. And it really speaks to, I think, the heart of what we're doing with these questions. Francis Schaeffer was a master apologist and expert in engaging people in conversation. And he shares in this quote, if I have only an hour with someone, I will spend the first 55 minutes asking questions and finding out what is troubling them. And I would share something of the truth for the remaining 5 minutes. And so if we have an hour with a Muslim or someone who is same-sex attracted, and we let them share about 55 minutes of the hour about what they believe or their experiences or how the church has hurt them, and we only share something of the truth for 5 minutes, we very often can think we've blown it or that we've squandered our opportunity, but that is not the case at all. Remember, listening well to someone doesn't mean that we affirm what they believe. It means that we're trying to understand them and show them love. And I really have thought again about worldview and how this plays out together. But remember in that first box in the worldview comparison, many in our culture today don't know that they're image bearers. When we lovingly listen to someone and let them share what they believe and why they believe it, it can give them a glimpse into what we see, that they are image bearers and valuable to God and us. And so I think we want to walk through some of those questions. Do you want me to start with that first one?
Yeah. How would you even start? If somebody makes a comment, you don't know what to do with it, what would you start with?
Okay. Yeah. Someone makes a statement. The first question that we use is, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? Simple and effective. This question's focus is just trying to figure out what someone believes specifically. And you can say it in different ways. You can say, tell me more about that, or define this term for me, please. But again, remembering how changing definitions really are a roadblock to us engaging and communicating well, this question just takes care of that by eliminating any confusion. So if someone were to say, all religions are basically the same, I know that's not true, but I don't respond by giving a 5-minute dissertation on why it's not. I ask the question, what do you mean by that they're all the same? Maybe they mean they're all worshiping the same God. Maybe they mean that they all have the same beliefs. Maybe they're all the same in function, but we want them to tell us what they mean. I can give you another example. So if someone says the Bible isn't reliable, even if you could give a 30-minute response, don't. We say instead, what do you mean by that? Or what do you mean by reliable? We don't know. We don't know what they mean. Is it that the Bible isn't reliable? Are they talking about history, scientific matters, the reliability of the transmission? We don't know. We want them to tell us. And so I just think that it's a simple question, but it is really an important first step in listening instead of talking.
I love that. So it goes back to even what we're talking about making sure that we're defining something the same way, but also just kind of opening up the opportunity for greater listening and sharing versus shutting somebody down with our response. Yeah, that's super helpful. Okay. So what about, let's say the conversation keeps going, and how would you continue to build on that?
Okay. Yes. I'm going to share the second question, but then I'm going to walk you through a couple of other terms that I think will help fill this out a little bit for us. So the second question is, how did you come to that conclusion? How did you come to that conclusion? This question gives you clarity about why someone believes what they believe. So our first question tells you what someone believes, and the second question tells you why they believe it. And so having said that, I think it's helpful if we just take a second here to consider two terms that really help when we're applying these questions. The first one is knowing what an argument is. An argument needs to have two pieces. It needs to have a claim, and it needs to have reasons or justifications to back it up. So an easy way to remember this is just like a simple picture of a house. You have a roof on a house, and then you have walls holding up the roof. If someone makes a claim or has an opinion, that's the roof. And if they have reasons or evidence for their opinion or their claim, that's the wall that holds it up. And so in order for someone to have a full argument, they need to have both. They need to have their claim and opinion, and then they need to have the reasons or evidence to back it up. merely expressing your view is not an argument. In order to have an argument, you need to have the evidence to back it up. And once you have both, your position becomes an argument. And here's the key point. We want to present arguments and only respond to arguments with information. So, for example, if someone says all religions are basically the same, that's just an opinion. It's not an argument. And so we don't respond with any information. We ask the question, how did you come to that conclusion?
So what you're saying is that sometimes maybe we jump into too quickly, where somebody says a comment and maybe we get offended. Maybe we're shut down. Maybe we just kind of change the subject, but maybe if we kind of engage, we begin to almost try to disprove their opinion and almost present our own argument, whereas they're really the ones that needs to kind of present or share what it is that they're thinking and how they arrived at that conclusion.
That is exactly right, Whitney. And that's called burden of proof. That's the responsibility someone has to give evidence or reasons for their view. And it's the person who makes the claim that bears the burden of proof. And again, it sounds kind of technical, but it essentially is just that if someone has an opinion, we want to hear why they have that opinion. And we want to hear their reasons and evidence for why they believe what they believe. Again, it's just that second step. And instead of talking and just continuing the listening and understanding, I think about it, if someone says God or science has proven the Bible wrong, if we jump in and we start telling somebody why that's not the case, we're not really learning. We're not listening and helping them think through it themselves. So we can just say, how did you come to that conclusion? And it furthers the process much better.
Okay. So we've gotten these first two crucial questions of what do you mean by that? And then on top of, kind of secondary kind of progressing forward would be, how did you come to that conclusion? Mm-hmm. And then how would you advise somebody? Is there kind of more that you would encourage somebody to do after maybe the conversation develops past that point?
Yes, definitely. And I will say though, that you literally can one and two question somebody all night long. I mean, we don't have to feel, especially if you're a new believer or you're just new to engaging people, you don't have to feel the pressure to have a big final punch, with whatever your thoughts are on the topic. You literally can just leave somebody with the understanding that they were well listened to and well cared for, and someone was very curious about who they are. And that's okay. That is, I think, progress and beneficial for building relationships. But if you are someone who is at a point where you feel comfortable, you've thoroughly asked questions and you feel like you've got a handle on what someone's believing, now we're at the last kind of 5 minutes, kind of the Francis Schaeffer last 5 minutes, where you want to share a bit of the truth with someone, then you can use this third question to advance that forward. So the third question is, have you ever considered fill in the blank? I'll show you what this might look like. If someone is believing basically that all religions teach basically the same thing, you might respond with, have you ever considered that most world religions are fundamentally different and only superficially the same? Or you could say, while I agree with you, there is a moral component in most religions, have you ever considered that it's because God has written the moral law on our hearts? Another one I've been thinking about is, if you're having a conversation with someone who believes maybe that Christians are just hypocrites and that is a roadblock for them, you can use a little humor and say, well, I agree with you that sometimes the biggest problem with Christianity is Christians, and ha ha, kind of laugh with them. But then you can continue to respond by saying, if someone plays Mozart poorly, who do you blame? Do you blame Mozart or do you blame the player who played it poorly? I think one that, another example that maybe is very relevant for today. If after listening to someone and it seems as though their moral authority in life is found in themselves, we can respond something like this. Have you ever considered the reason we think there are such concepts as fair and unfair is because our maker is a just God and we've been made in his image? Have you ever considered the reason love is a virtue and hatred a vice is because God is a God of relationships who formed us?
I think that's so good. Because of this approach of asking questions versus defending kind of a fortress of your argument, it's an invitation to think and to dialogue. And so I think that one of the things that we've talked about before is just that even as you're asking these questions, that this isn't just meant to be like solely used in a one-on-one interchange and you never have contact with this person. It could serve that purpose, mm-hmm. where maybe it's just a one-time interaction with somebody. But also thinking about this in the context of the bigger overarching ongoing relationship that we have with many people, whether it's a neighbor or a coworker or a family member that we see regularly. And so it's less about like strategy or manipulation, but building an ongoing relationship that's based in humble understanding and asking, and also wanting and hoping and desiring and praying that this person's eyes are open to see the beauty of the gospel and to know the love of Christ. And it's, and so it's like a, almost you have to zoom out a little bit, right? Out of the,
yes,
the little microcosm of the conversation and mm-hmm. see the bigger picture of the relationship and how this is almost like approach to relationships in general.
100%. I agree with you. And we are kind of talking about some kind of, they feel a little artificial, you know, like we're putting in this
like a formula or something.
Yeah. Some formula. And that can lead people to feel like, well, this doesn't feel very authentic, or maybe it's manipulative. And I would agree that you can use questions to corner somebody and to make them feel uncomfortable. And we absolutely never want to do that. I mean, these questions are for people who have the mind of Christ, people who are wanting to lovingly engage the people around them. And so, but I also think that these questions, when practiced, even though maybe initially it doesn't feel natural, can be excellent tools to get us past that point where we're not engaging because of roadblocks. They can be a way to just a bridge, really, to stay connected with people that we love and want to continue to grow with.
That's really helpful for me, even just to think what you just said of a bridge, building a bridge. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a tool to be exercised in humility and love and with discernment and asking for God's Holy Spirit to lead and guide the conversation versus a 1-2-3-step formula. Right. But I think that this can be challenging for so many reasons, because, you know, many of us will say, well, I just don't know enough about my own faith to enter into these type of conversations. Or maybe some of us are people pleasers, or we're very harmony driven. And the thought of opening up some of this just feels like Pandora's box. And so it's like, why would I even step on this landmine? So what encouragement would you give here to folks that might feel like that?
Yes. I mean, I think that's a valid question. I mean, people can feel like they're putting a job or a relationship or reputation on the line simply by engaging someone on a specific topic. But I would encourage everyone, these questions can be used like that olive branch or that bridge, an extension of love. And we aren't telling people what to think. We are lovingly asking questions, showing gentleness and respect. I actually believe this style of asking these types of questions is tailor-made for those thoughtful, quiet, non-confrontational types, as well as those of us that are maybe a more tell it like it is. It's a way through for all of us. And I think it's biblical. I mean, if we look at 1 Peter 3:15, but in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense for anyone who asks you for the reason for the hope that is within you, doing it with gentleness and respect. And of course, in James, we're instructed to be quick to listen and slow to speak. I think that if we are in humility, asking God to use us to be his instrument of peace and lovingly engage those around us, I think these questions can be a tool that that we can use, that we can develop in our own repertoire to bless others.
Jeannie, you shared with me a really beautiful story of your own experience with, you know, in your counseling training. And I'd love for you just to share that story about how you saw some of this play out.
Yes, you know, I think we can start to feel, I certainly have had moments where I feel like, oh, I didn't do this right. I said the wrong thing, as I shared earlier too. But even now when I feel like I'm getting better, I still feel like I can make mistakes. But I do have to think back to back when I was in my school counseling training, I learned this lesson I feel like God blessed me with. So part of our training included being paired up with a classmate and practicing specific counseling techniques on one another as we talked about real issues in our life. And so one day I was paired up with a classmate who happened to be a Vietnam vet. He was in a wheelchair. He didn't have legs from the knee down. And me being a young, inexperienced college girl, I was pretty nervous and humbled to be in the seat of counseling him. We were in a room with a two-way mirror so our teacher could watch and provide feedback. Well, I remember just being so intentionally present and wanting to hold everything that he was sharing with me so carefully. And I felt like he sensed that from me. But when the session was over, the professor came out and was giving me a decent amount of critique about what I would, some of my technique. And after she would share something that I did wrong or something I could do better, my classmate would interrupt and he'd say, "Oh, no, 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 I didn't feel that way at all." And he was just, he just kept defending me. And I think it was based on the interaction that he and I genuinely had, even though the professor was absolutely right to correct me in some of those techniques. The heart was sensed and completely delivered back and forth between the two of us. He knew that I was really listening, really trying to care for him and to love him well by listening. And that covered my mistakes. And I think love does cover our mistakes. And I just would encourage everyone to not worry too much about the technical stuff. And actually, I would encourage people to spend more time just in prayer and just really staying in step with God's Spirit so that when we do have those opportunities, that they are coming from just a genuine love for one another.
This story, I think, is an encouragement because I think it's a great reminder to us that, you know, my dad always has this cheesy phrase that as kids we would always roll our eyes at, and now I say it, and it's people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And when when we build relationships with people, it's never about winning an argument. And when Christ calls us into relationship and he gives us this model of sacrificial, self-giving love, we have opportunities to do that with people all the time, whether they think the same way as us, whether they look the same way as us, whether they agree with us. And so along those lines, one of our core values in Woven is to be postured in humility. And I know you've shared just some stories of how you've messed up along the way in this journey, but just any final words or thoughts that you have for anybody that, again, that might feel kind of overwhelmed by this.
Yes. Yes. Well, I would say, I still struggle with jumping in and sharing my opinion. I don't know whether it's because I came from a big family and we always had to, if we wanted to be heard, we had to kind of jump in, but I do still struggle with that. But I have found that, God is so faithful and forgiving. And I think other people are too. And so when I feel like, oh, I think I jumped in too quick, or I shouldn't have done that, and I can just be honest and transparent with that other person and just say, oh, you know what? I'm jumping in, but I really just want to listen to you and hear more about what you are thinking and why you think it. Just start over. And you can do that at any point and have a good outcome with that.
That's great. I think that, I mean, really it's like, it sounds, I think that we have become so maybe divided and kind of siloed that some of this feels overwhelming, but it really is kind of some just like basic, like neighborly, even just walking outside my door and asking a neighbor a question. You know, some of those things, you know, it feels like we just pull into our driveways, let the, you know, remote kind of close the garage door, and we live in isolation and it just feels more comfortable, you know? And God has invited us into something so much more than living our life in isolation, you know? So, I think this has been helpful for me just since I first heard you share about some of these things, even in, not just in faith, controversial issues, hot topics, but also just in approaching a conversation with a new person, you know, and asking, admitting my faults, listening, and just the approach of how I come to the table instead of saying, I have something here that you need to hear, right?
Yes.
Coming to the figurative table or maybe the literal table, you know, of meeting somebody for the first time over coffee and lovingly engaging them. And I think when we look at scripture, we see that in different ways in how Christ approached and engaged the people around him.
And now stay tuned for the outro.
Hey gang, and welcome to the outro. I have a question for you.
All right, let's hear it.
What do you want Woven to be known for in this community? So what do you want this community to feel like is the culture of your ministry?
I want the women of Woven to be characterized by being just abundantly gracious and the kind of people that don't get easily offended, that are just like life-giving and refreshing and just the kind of people that you just want to linger with and the kind of people who are so humble and real and refreshing and honest, but also don't make it about them, you know. And I think the kind of people who are also just fiercely loving and love in a way that just doesn't hold anything back. Really, when it comes down to it, I want Woven to be the hands and feet of Christ to this community, but more that when a woman comes into a retreat or into a Bible study or into a gathering, that they would experience what it's like to just spend time in God's presence, because the women that they encounter would just truly be overflowing with the goodness of God and the graciousness of God and the love of God. And so that's more of almost like the culture as far as like what I want women to feel and experience when they come in. But I pray that as this ministry grows, that the women of Woven would be women of action, that they would be dependable, that they would be women who do what they say they're going to do, that they follow through and are faithful to do any job put before them with excellence, and also just that they're the kind of people that you spend a lot of time with and they made it about you. You know, they made it about, they didn't make it about them, but they made it about, getting to know the other person. So I don't know. Those are some of the things that come to mind. I do talk a lot about how I want to build a culture of discipleship, which is, you know, kind of a churchy word, but really a culture where women are always seeking counsel and wisdom from women older than them and women maybe who have more experience or more wisdom in a certain area. And also women are always pouring into other women. And a lot of times that takes place in like an age bracket, you know, where older women are pouring into younger women, younger women are, and those women are pouring into younger women. But it doesn't have to be just that. I think that wherever we're at and wherever the women are of Woven are at, I would want them to always seek the wisdom and counsel and input of other women around them and be humble enough to receive it and hear it and seek after that. And then also always see that there's so many opportunities to bring women in, to pour into people, and to see people for who they are, and to see people with the eyes of the Lord as opposed to with the eyes of the world that look on the outside. Yeah, so those are some of the things that come to mind.
So what would you say that you and your leadership team are doing to communicate that culture right now?
You know, I think when we chose our core values are kind of like what we say is like the pillars of the ministry: biblically grounded, centered on Christ, intentionally relational, and postured in humility. And the more that we look at those and the more that we seek to actively integrate those, the more that I see what I was just talking about kind of come to life, you know, where it's less about, well, these are the things that we say we believe, and these are these are the things that we're seeking to practice and we're seeking to put into action. You know, I think that the more that we not only familiarize ourselves with those things, but, you know, after every single Bible study retreat event, we do a plus delta and we really look at, hey, what are the things that went well and what are the things that we could grow in here? What are the celebrations that we really want to mark and remember and look back on? And then what are some of the things that maybe were blind spots or are just areas of growth? And that practice has kind of just infused the leadership with, I think, this, this good balance of like, hey, we always want to be pausing to look and see what God's doing and to celebrate and remember and reflect. And then we also can humbly always go, you know what? This isn't about me. Like, somebody bringing some criticism or some feedback it's not about me. I don't need to get all mopey and take it personally, but how can we grow from this? You know, I think that that's a huge piece of it, and just creating a culture where that's part of our regular practice, because then it breeds both like a dedication to remember and celebrate and pause to do those things, because those are so important, and also a humility to never be above reproach, to never be above, you know, feedback, or to never be above a good word of truthful criticism, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's really important just to maintain a healthy posture in the community, because if somehow, you know, your reputation or your, you know, the good name of Woven is somehow tied to something that isn't one of those characteristics that you just described, then the people in this town and the broader audience as well start to have a skewed perspective on what's actually going on inside the doors of Woven. So,
yeah,
I think you do a good job of that.
Oh, thank you. Even though you're a guy and you're not really like invited to Woven.
I'm not
events.
Invited to participate.
Just the banquet.
From the outside looking in, as an outsider,
yeah.
I think you're doing a good job.
Thanks, babe.
Love you.
Love you.
If you'd like to know more about this ministry, check out our website at wovenministry.com or download the Woven app to engage on a deeper level. Please take the time to rate and review this podcast. It helps listeners find this feed. But better yet, share Wits End with a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown, and production is by Tim Scarborough. We are so thrilled you tuned in today.